This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Markets reacting to the July jobs report, and they do not love it. From APM in New York, I'm Molly Wood, in for David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. July job numbers are out, and all in all, they're not too bad. The economy added 215,000 jobs in July, and unemployment held steady at 5.3%. That's a 7-year low. Manufacturing was a bright spot in the report, too, but Wall Street still opened down on the news. For more on the market reaction, we spoke to Chris Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial. Good morning, Chris. Thanks for joining us.
Good to be here.
So it looks like the markets are not that impressed with this morning's job report. What do you make of that?
This is what's happened 4 of the last 5 months, that the number is a little bit weaker than what the market was looking for, but it's a little bit better than what the Federal Reserve is looking for. And so what happens is the market sort of backs off thinking this is kind of weak. We get a couple of Fed officials coming out saying this is just fine. It's plenty strong. You know, good news is terrific because, hey, we've got growth. But on the other hand, good news is a little scary because it gives the Fed reason to tighten.
So we saw a low wage growth. Some of that maybe seemed to be made up for by more hours worked. What are your thoughts there?
I think what's going on there is that there's been a shift in the last few months. We've lost a lot of high-paying oil sector jobs. We've lost some high-paying manufacturing jobs. We have faster service job growth, but they are not the highest-paying service jobs. So there has been a slowdown in wages. I think that should stabilize and begin to reverse once oil prices find a bottom. But, you know, looking at the last month, that could be a while.
And low wages but more hours doesn't sound like maybe a great thing for workers? What do you think?
No, of course not. And this is what the Fed itself is struggling with as well. If they're worried about inflation, it's hard to imagine where it's going to come from if people are making less money.
And so do you think after today's report that the rate hike is imminent?
I think it probably is. There's only one more employment report before the September Fed meeting. Fed President Lockhart from Atlanta, I think he said it really well. With the data I have in hand now, I will vote for a rate hike, he said. The only thing that's going to change my mind is if the remaining data is really weak. There's now even less remaining data than there was when he said that on Tuesday.
Chris Lowe, FTN Financial, thanks again.
Thank you.
The chocolate giant Hershey reported flat quarterly sales this morning and predicted even worse numbers for the rest of the year. It's the first time in 5 years Hershey has had a flat quarter. But prices are up, demand is down in China, and the U.S. is all into health and calorie counting. None of those things, it appears, are good for chocolate. The independent film The Diary of a Teenage Girl opens this weekend. The film was one of the standouts at the Sundance Film Festival, and Sony Pictures Classic bought it, hoping it will blow up at the box office. But other indie films of the summer have struggled. For more on that, we go to Marketplace's Adrian Hill. Good morning, Adrian.
Good morning, Molly.
So we've seen some pretty hyped indie films sputter at the box office this summer, right?
We have. There was lots of buzz around a movie called Dope. It was the talk of Sundance, but it wasn't a breakout hit. There were also high hopes for another Sundance darling, Me and Earl and the Dying Girl. There were bidding wars for the film. It got great reviews and then pretty much crickets, at least in movie terms. The movie's made about $6.5 million. And to put that in a little context, Mission Impossible made $20 million over that on just opening night.
So were competing blockbusters the problem, or what went wrong here?
part of the problem might come back to these competing blockbusters. This was a summer where critics have been pretty enthused about these tentpoles. They gave great reviews to Mission Impossible, Spy, Mad Max, others. But USC professor Jason Squire says it's sort of an ebb and flow in the indie movie industry that the people just expect.
There are always, every year, examples of movies, big and small, that don't perform compared to expectations. That's the nature of the movie business. That's why it's such a fascinating business.
So, Molly, the next big indie breakout could be right around the corner. We just have no idea.
But what does that mean? I mean, that's all well and good to say it's just part of the business. But what does it mean for indie filmmakers and distributors who are hoping to get picked up next year?
Well, I think that there's a sense that more and more indie filmmakers are looking for other distribution models for their films. They're starting to think about things like video on demand, maybe putting their films out there so we can stream them when we want. And many of these indie films play really well on our home TV, so it makes some sense. You know, and it's all the industry trying to figure out how to get more of us watching and paying to watch the movies they've made.
Marketplace's Adrienne Hill, thank you.
Thanks, Molly.
One last note before we go. Sunday marks 1 year since the killing of Michael Brown by a white police officer in Ferguson, Missouri. In the aftermath of that shooting, the city's economy took a hit that still shows. Businesses have vanished, some after lootings and vandalizing. Overtime pay for the police and other costs have increased, and the city faces a $3.2 million deficit. That's up from just $1 million 2 years ago. The Missouri legislature also recently passed a cap on how much money cities can collect from traffic tickets and fines. That was supposed to stop police from disproportionately stopping black drivers. It has also cut deeply into city revenues. The state is offering tax incentives to draw in new businesses, but the Ferguson city government said it still might have to cut services or even lay off workers. I'm Molly Wood with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.